Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty, along with Rita Dunaway, and we also have a special guest in studio with us who I will introduce in just a minute. But first, Rita, we need to have a private word with our listeners. We haven't made a big fuss about this, but last week we celebrated our 100th radio program since we began broadcasting 2 years ago. Can you believe it? And I just want to make sure that our listeners understand we couldn't have done it without you and without your help. So we want to thank you for being with us at the Crossroads during this time, for your encouragement, for your prayers, and for your financial support. And we thank God for the opportunity to spend this precious time with you every week. Now, here's a second thing we need to tell our listeners, Rita. Okay. Yes, in every program, we do try to inform and mobilize the Valley to take biblically informed action on hot-button issues where and when needed, even at election time, but really throughout the year. Last week, though, was a little different because we didn't talk about any of these hot-button issues. Instead, we talked about a common, everyday event in our lives. It's about parenting. I know, it seems kind of mundane.
Not to me.
Well, what is there to say about parenting that everyone hasn't already heard? Therefore, my question was, why would any of our listeners be interested in that? Well, that's what I did think, until we got a note after the program from one of our longtime listeners who said it was probably the best and most important program we've ever had because, and I quote, parenting is where it all begins, unquote. Well, for those of you who may have missed it last week, or if you'd like to hear it again, just go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org. It's on our homepage under the title, Parenting, the Age of Opportunity. But we're not finished with that topic yet. And that's why I am just delighted to introduce our special guest, Bill Leach, who is the pastor of Christ Presbyterian Church here in Harrisonburg. Bill, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you all. Thanks, Dean.
Well, before we get into this second program on parenting, Bill, could you tell us a bit about yourself, your family, your church, and maybe even offer some preliminary comments about what being a parent means to you?
Sure, Dean. I'm the pastor of Christ Presbyterian Church, as you said. We're a small congregation that meets in the Elks Lodge in downtown Harrisonburg, and it's a wonderful, smaller body of believers, and it's been a delight to be part of that work. It's a relatively new congregation. We're about 8 years old. I'm married to a bright, wonderful, beautiful, insightful woman, and we have five children, ages 22 down to about 13. I think I've got that right. Yeah, this whole topic of parenting, I think, is on the one hand, it's a privilege and a grave responsibility in terms of raising children and what the scriptures call us to, the fear and admonition of the Lord. And yet it's also something that I think shapes us as individuals, that we probably learn as much about our own need for Christ and growth and knowledge and wisdom as we engage in that process. So I think it's a two-way street, you know, that we are imparting hopefully wisdom and faith, and at the same time growing in our own wisdom and faith as we do that.
Bill, you also serve as part of the board for Redeemer Classical School in Keeseltown, and your wife teaches my kids Latin there. Would you just say a word or two about Redeemer Classical School and why you have invested so much of your time and energy there over the years?
Sure. A lot of the origins of Redeemer come out of our attempts at training up our own children alongside of other families, and then eventually, as you said, coming together with them at the founding of the school, and really wanting to pass on to our children a methodology of education that's rooted in what is historically known as classical education, but from a very conscious Christian perspective. And so that has been, on the one hand, sort of a necessity as we were raising our own kids, but at the same time, a desire that we have not only for our family, but for our community as a whole.
Well, Bill, how old is Redeemer? Because I'm thinking of your children. You have a 22-year-old. Did that oldest child go through the Redeemer program?
Yes. In fact, he was one of our guinea pigs, if you will. He was with the original class that started with the school. So the school is approaching 11 or 12 years. We just had our 10-year anniversary, and I can't remember if it was a year ago or 2 years ago. Yeah. So
then he would have been a preteen first year.
Yes, he was.
So that really, you've seen the value of having a school that reinforces your belief, your faith, and instead of being in conflict with it.
Yes, mm-hmm. sure.
So mm-hmm. critical. Well, that really brings us into our topic this week. And once again, for our listeners, it's all about parenting, and specifically about the challenges and opportunities every parent faces in a culture that seems hostile to our faith in so many ways. So, Bill, first of all, I think we need to establish our commonality here, or differences as the case may be. Would you agree with that premise, that the culture is often hostile to our faith?
Well, I think that's a great question to ask, particularly as parents. And I think on one level, we would all sort of immediately agree that there are aspects of the culture that seem hostile to our Christian principles and our Christian faith. But I think we really need to think carefully about how we convey our understanding of culture to our children. And part of that is rooted in how we understand culture. I mean, biblically, we know that, you know, Jesus, as he speaks with his disciples in John chapter 15, he talks about the reality that, you know, the world hates God, the world hates Christ, and therefore the world is always in opposition to Christ and his people. So that's a sort of a foundational belief and truth that's true in every age of the church. And so part of what we have to do as members of the church and as parents is discern, what does it look like in our particular day and age? How does that affect us? And so we certainly want to affirm that reality and think carefully about how that's the case. But at the same time, we need to recognize that we're enculturated beings. We live in that culture. In fact, the scripture is very clear that we're not to be separate from the culture, but immersed in it. And yet, you know, the whole idea of being in the world, but not of the world. And so we have to think about what that looks like. We had the admonition to love our neighbors, to pray for those in authority, to do good to all men. So there's that reality that we have to be in the culture. And so part of what we need to do is both help our children understand what are the aspects of culture that undermine and that are detrimental to our Christian beliefs. And yet at the same time, you know, humanity's made in the image of God. There's much good in our culture. And so discerning that, looking at that, affirming that, participating in that are all parts of what we need to do. So I think it's important that as we think about conveying this idea to our children, that it's that we convey that complexity, that there's both things that are difficult and hard and detrimental, and at the same time, there's much that's good and that's true. So we need both of those sort of realities in our own thinking, as well as we try and communicate that to our children.
You know, what you just said goes right along with something we talked about on last week's program when we discussed Paul David Tripp's book, The Age of Opportunity, because he talks about the importance of what he calls redemptive interaction with our culture, that instead of making this binary choice between either just withdrawing completely from our culture or just going right along and, you know, doing everything that we see everyone else doing, we need to really train our kids to examine what they see in the culture according to the truth of Scripture, mm-hmm. and then to realize the commonality that we have in, you know, being fallen beings, just like we see these evidences of the fallen world around us. We need to understand our commonality with that and then be able to speak hope to that. Yeah. So I think that is just such an important concept, but it's hard. And it takes work. You know, I am alarmed by the messaging of our culture that my kids are getting every day in some forms, whether I like it or not. What do you think are a few of the predominant messages that our culture is transmitting to our kids that are really in conflict with biblical principles?
Yeah, again, that's another great question. There's a lot out there. And like you said, we need to do the hard work and exercise wisdom and care in thinking about that. I think one of the things that sort of viscerally hits us is, you know, what I've said before to my own wife and kids, it's just sort of the coarsening of the culture, the pervasive sexuality that our children are faced with. You can't turn anywhere and not see that. And it's disturbing. And I think in a lot of ways we want to, particularly early on, we want to shield our children from that. And then in time prepare and enable them to know how to interact with that. But I also think, and you know, as my kids have gotten older, I think one of the things that is maybe even of more sort of foundational importance is really helping them learn how to reason and think well about what they face in the culture, mm-hmm. particularly because there's so much within the culture that is contrary to that approach, that so much of what we see out there, both, you know, popularly and even, you know, more serious thinking that tends towards how people feel. You know, I saw some meme on media the other day that, you know, just sort of saying that now feelings would be acceptable answers on math tests, you know, sort of, you know, just laughing about that idea.
Yeah.
And obviously a parody, but just kind of that idea of helping children think well. And then also, the water that we swim in nowadays is often the idea that science is the final arbiter of truth, mm-hmm. and truth kind of with a capital T, that without rejecting science and the scientific process, how do we help them understand that there's a bit of an overreach there at times in terms of science being able to provide philosophical and grounded reasoning for our morality? They can't. And I think also just the idea that there's within our culture this idea that sort of government and technology are really going to be able to solve all of our problems. And again, without rejecting those, the value that we can see in those things, also helping that our children and ourselves understand that there's a real limit to that. And even there's other avenues that get overlooked and when we begin to think in those terms.
That's great. Just a quick comment, and then I want to get Dean's take on the question. But you were talking about feelings and how our culture just really promotes and idolizes feelings and emotion. And I talk with my kids about that all the time, and I've decided, you know, every time I go into TJ Maxx or Target or wherever, you see all these, you know, these frame signs that say things like, follow your heart. So I've decided I'm going to buy one of those, and I'm going to put a big red X over it and hang it up in our hallway as a constant reminder, because that's in everything. It's in all the Disney movies. It is in, you know, books, and it's everywhere. And it's really opposite of what Scripture teaches us we should be doing. So
right.
I think that's a big one. Dean, did you have some comments?
Well, thank you for asking, Rita. As a matter of fact, I do.
Okay, I thought you might.
Well, it really reinforces everything that both of you have said. Now, I've broken it down into a couple of categories. First one is evolution. There is no God. We're just blobs of matter that's not responsible mm-hmm. to any transcendent authority, and that we have no spiritual purpose. Mm-hmm. I think that is just, that just surrounds us. There is no God. Mm-hmm. Secondly, and it follows onto that, is the idea of relativism. There is no absolute truth, something that you alluded to, especially on moral issues. There's only opinion, and therefore we are free to everyone to do what is right in his own eyes, as we hear from Judges. And again, that violates what the Bible says. Thy word is truth. There is absolute truth. A third one is meism, and you've just been talking about that. If it feels good, do it. It's all about me, what makes me happy, and we're to reject anything that gets in the way of our immediate self-gratification. And then a final one, and it again flows from all of these, is the whole attack on biblical authority. The Bible is just an outdated book of stories and archaic rules. It has no value in or application to our world today. We make up our own rules because we are so much better informed and so much more enlightened than they were in the old days. So these are just things that we are swimming in. You talk about swimming in this culture. And I just think that our children just face much more challenges than we did as I was growing up. Yes, we had challenges, but it wasn't quite to the degree, I think, that our children face today. Well, question again, Bill, for you. Let's go on. And it really goes back to something that Rita alluded to earlier. One of the principles that we discussed last week from Paul Tripp's book, Age of Opportunity, is this whole idea, and frankly, I'm starting to think it's a fantasy, this whole idea of making wisdom and truth so beautiful and so attractive to our kids that at some point they will desire it and seek it on their own. So, Bill, this is a challenge. How do we do that? And how have you managed to do that with your own children? I'm making an assumption there.
I know your kids come home every day and say, Dad, just let me sit at your feet and absorb wisdom from you, right?
That's what I said. I think we're talking fantasy here.
I know that it were the case. But we do need to think about principally what are we trying to do. But it is very hard then to work that out, you know, at the end of a long day as everybody comes in from various activities or, you know, if you're at home with one another throughout the day, it regardless of the context, it's hard work to sort of make that application. And I think a lot of it simply has to do with learning and laboring to talk with and listen to our children. You know, I think so often we want to talk to them. Yeah. Rather than with them. And so it's learning how to speak about the things that are going on in our lives as well as in their lives and really invite them to comment and to discuss and to reflect. You know, one of the things that, you know, we see in the book of Proverbs is this, you know, idea of learning wisdom, that if you read Proverbs 26, it says, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. And then the very next verse says, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes.
Yes.
And, you know, as you read that, you think, well, which is it? And, you know, the response is, well, yes, it's both of those things. And wisdom is discerning, knowing when to do which. And that's not a, you know, a black and white, right and wrong kind of situation. It takes maturity. So I think a lot of it is learning how to talk with our children, listen to the things that they're wrestling with, and particularly as they grow older, inviting their own thoughts and comments on things. I think another aspect of this is learning how to have our children engaged with other adults. I think it's something that in our time and era, we tend to want to group everybody according to age, and we lose out on that. Yeah. The number of instances for particularly my older children, when I can, you know, after a church service, see them talking to older people and knowing at times that those people are speaking truth into their lives. And they may not be saying anything different than I am, but they're going to hear it because it's not coming from me. So just that reality of investing in relationships where our children are able to develop significant relationships with other adults. So I think a lot of it is simply learning how to listen and talk. And you know, our kids, as they have gotten older, have been in public high school, and that's been a great opportunity for them. But It's learning how to invite their perspectives and their friends' perspectives at the dinner table and really wrestling together with what they're thinking. And I think, Dean, one of the things, you know, you mentioned some of those areas in which the culture sort of is hostile to and undermines Christian faith. We have to recognize that our kids are going to be surrounded by people whom they love, that they delight in, and that are good friends of theirs that think like that. And so they're not seeing that with such a pejorative edge to it. They're sort of being challenged in the sense of, these things are kind of, these are coming from people I respect. So I think we have to, that's part of that wisdom is just talking with them.
Yeah, and as you're saying that, I'm thinking about the fact that if we are not effectively engaging our kids in conversation about what's happening outside of our home or just even what's happening with them, what's right. happening in their own hearts and, you know, what is going on with their emotions and how to deal with that, then we're creating a vacuum. And something will fill that vacuum if we allow it to be there. So I think the challenge for parents is that we're all busy. Right. And it takes so much time and thought. And sometimes, a lot of the times, when our kids are open to having these kinds of deep conversations with us, it is not convenient for us at that time. You know, it may be an hour past my bedtime. But it's a matter of discipline, I think, sometimes for us as parents to say, this is really important, and even though it's not convenient, I'm going to engage.
Right.
Well, Bill, as you know, my kids are nearing those teenage years, so I want to get really practical now and pick your brain. How have you handled the issue of secular music, TV, books, and movies with your kids? I just am always feeling self-conscious about what I'm doing, and, you know, I have things that I have tried to do purposefully, but I'm always questioning myself about, have I struck the right balance? Am I dealing with it the right way? Can you give some advice to parents on this?
Maybe.
Okay.
I think the one place to begin, again, is not to think so much in terms of what to avoid, but more in terms of what to pursue. Mm-hmm. Introduce your children to what is good. Introduce them to good literature, good books. Draw them into the classics, you know, in terms of literature and music and theater and art and dance and all of those aspects of culture. And if you don't know what that is, find people that do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of being in a community. And so I would say, you know, begin by doing that. Read to them early and often. Mm-hmm. That's a great way of introducing them to what is good in the culture. And then as they kind of branch out on their own and as they interact with other kids that maybe are coming with different values, investigate the more popular stuff that you might have questions about.
Yeah.
Some of that means, I mean, I have the advantage of a wife who reads voraciously and reads quite a bit of young adult fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've read some of that, and it's valuable to sort of see what about this is so enticing and to acknowledge that and validate that aspect of that artistic work. And yet at the same time, be able to come and say, you know, here are some themes and some ideas that, you know, are contrary to truth.
Yeah.
And so helping, and I think it's good in that sense of just helping them to discern what's going on.
Mm.
I mean, obviously you want to be careful in terms of what's going on in the material and age appropriateness,
right.
But introducing that kind of stuff to them under, you know, your own roof is a great way to do that, and processing that with them, helping them to understand too that there's stuff out there that their friends will see and watch and participate in that they're not going to, and they may not understand that, and being able to sort of quote-unquote, ruin their lives every now and then. That's an okay thing to do.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, obviously there's a lot more that we can do in that front. But I think the payoff, and I've seen this too, is as our children have gotten older, is we get to see what they're interested in in terms of these things. One of the things that we do in the evening, often as we're cleaning up, is put music on, and every one of the kids has a night they can play their own music.
Oh, what a
and
good idea.
So, you know, it's a great way for them to sort of process themselves. Here's what I like, but I'm going to be playing this for everybody in the family.
Yeah.
And so they have to exercise a bit of discernment. And at times, even, you know, I know they don't like this. I mean, not in terms of it's being wrong or anything, but other than the family don't appreciate that. So, it creates a great opportunity For them to grow in their own discernment.
Yeah, there are really opportunities there. One of the things that we have done is we will sometimes go on the internet and look up the whole set of lyrics for a popular song that, you know, I hear my kids talking about or singing or whatever. And I'll have the kids read the lyrics out loud without the music, just the lyrics. And then I'll ask them, what do you think is the theme of this song? What do you think is the message? And see, first of all, if they get it, if they know what the message is, and then we'll evaluate the message and we'll talk about it. And sometimes the end result is, yeah, that's a good song. You know, that's a good message. And sometimes it's, well, that's not really what we believe, is it? But it's a great opportunity to engage your kids.
Sure. That's wonderful.
Well, Bill, we only have 2 minutes left, so we're going to have to be fairly brief on these. Sure. But the first question, we have two questions. The first one is, yes, it's an ideal world to have angels as children. That just doesn't normally happen. So what do you say to a parent of a child who resists attending church or Bible study or doing family worship? How do you deal with that?
Well, I think we've got to understand that when children are doing that, that it's not coming from nowhere. Again, it's talking to them, listening to them, engaging with others within your church to come alongside them if they're resistant to talking to you. But it's helping them process why that is the case. So I would say, you know, there's no pat answer to that, but you can maintain your standards and requirements within your home, and yet at the same time open up multiple avenues for your children to express what they're wrestling with to you and to others.
Okay, one last question. Yes. I'm going to try to sneak in quickly. What would you advise parents to do when we experience that conflict between wanting to be liked by our kids and be our kids' friend and needing to provide discipline and guidance?
I think I would approach that whole idea a little differently in the sense that I'm not my children's friend. I'm their father. Yeah. Now, as they mature and grow and we learn to appreciate one another, there's aspects of friendship that develop amongst us. But I need to keep the primary relationship primary, that I'm their father, and that's my primary role. And that over time, as I exercise that role wisely, you know, there is growth and maturity that happens. Just quickly, you know, a couple of months ago, my son called me with a question he had about another friend that was struggling. And we talked as peers. And that was one of the first times I've been able to do that, you know, with him in a way like that. And that's gratifying. But that you know, that comes with time.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for being here today. This concludes part two of our series on parenting, The Age of Opportunity, with our special guest today, Pastor Bill Leach from Christ Presbyterian Church. If you would like to listen to this program again, go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and just click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our sponsors, Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the Dental Practice of Scott Dunaway. And thank you to you individuals out there for your prayers, encouragement, and financial support. If you want to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia 22803. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week for the final chapter of this series. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action at the crossroads where faith and culture meet.
Let us rejoice and be glad in you.
Rejoice, rejoice.